With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Are you ready?
Labia. America is the labia of America. I guess Mexico and Canada are sort of the outer labia of America.
Well... Well, okay, but that's if America is the opening?
Well, I mean, I thought it was going to be a whole person. And it,
well, this is the, okay,
the,
but,
the, far, but, the far outer labia. hello and welcome to Two in the Think Tank, the podcast where we come up with sketch ideas and interpretations of what... countries, what body parts of countries might be.
Oh, this is very Two in the Think Tank. Yeah. Very, very. Yes. I've got this great sketch idea. Every country. Oh, what if a geographer has a theory that every country has all the different bits of it, are different body parts. And they stand in front of a lecture theatre explaining their theory, pointing at a thing, and they say, oh, the Mexico is the outer labia.
Wow, when you do your voice like that, it's way harder to understand you.
Well, at the end, I was just saying, da-da-da-da-da.
That's so true. But I mean, but I guess that's what makes you the treble of the
of the Birchall.
Of the Birchall, yeah.
Mm. Alistair, before the podcast started, we were mentioning the idea of Patreon. And I don't want any of our Patreon supporters to interpret this in any way as a threat. But
or in any way whatsoever.
I don't want them to be able to understand a single word I'm saying. Is that too much to ask?
Well, then go back into doing that high pitched voice you were doing before.
Sketch we were proposing.
What happened was apparently when at the beginning of every month, this is when the Patreon is charged. By the way, you can support our Patreon. Thank you so much for everybody who does. You guys are the greatest.
Absolutely, everyone.
When it's charged, your number of people who follow you on Patreon or support you on Patreon drops at the beginning of the month because apparently it tries to contact people's accounts, and when it gets rejected initially, it just assumes that that person is no longer a follower until it can contact your bank account.
They assume that that person has sort of closed their bank account entirely to avoid having to any further give... support this stupid podcast.
They've moved interstate. They've changed their name.
They've assumed a new identity.
Yeah. and we were talking about how, but it eventually does track these people. Like somehow Patreon does eventually contact these people, and they get rejoined as donators. And we were suggesting that maybe that was because Patreon has a service that sends people to their houses,
round to their house,
breaks their legs,
shake them down. Oh, it's a very nice house you got here, sir. Be a shame if something were to happen, you know, on account of you did enter into what may be known as a digital contract, wherein you guaranteed, seems to me, maybe, that you would give $3 a month. And lo and behold, the $3 a month has not arrived for Mr. Wisden's monthly newsletter.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, so you're a supposed patron of the arts. Yes, well, yes. And it's a very nice thing to be. That is, of course, when the payment goes through.
Yes, and it seems to me that on his end of the bargain, you have got the service what you gave the $3 for on account of you were able to vote in the Twitter poll to name his new goldfish. So, seems to me that we got a bit of a problem here, don't we? And then they, burn down your garage and stab your dog with a garden fork until you give them $3.
Garden fork is, of course, the fork that you eat a garden salad with.
Yes. What if every type of every type of food had its own specialized utensil?
Yes, it's a burrito glove.
You know what? I think of all the things, you've really hit upon something there, actually, where the burrito absolutely could handle having a special type of glove. And I tell you what it would look like as well. Mm. It would sort of be a cross between a glove and one of those baby's bibs where it sort of curves up
and
at
catches
the bottom
all the stuff.
To catch stuff. So it'd be a glove that goes down past your wrist, okay, maybe just sort of halfway to your elbow, and then it flares up all the way around so that when you're sort of mid-burrito and the juices start to dribble down, they don't actually dribble all the way down your hand, and they're trapped there in the moat around the wrist.
I think
and then I was going to suggest that also this is the real innovation of the burrito glove. Is that on the side of the thumb there's a little tubular opening, right, that runs down into the bottom of the moat, right, and it's a little straw that's built into the glove. So when you finish eating your burrito, you can suck on your thumb and suck up all the burrito juices.
Oh, I don't know why that bothers me. It's just like I'll eat the juice while it's in there, while it's in the burrito. But afterwards, I love the idea of sucking on the thumb. I mean, look, I really like that, but couldn't there be a thing where, look, I'm picturing it as more of a, it's like a webbed glove, but underneath, but between the thumb and the pinky, there's like a thing that goes all the way around over to that side as well. And it's a bit like a stubby holder, like a thing that keeps your drink cold like that. And then you just slot your burrito in there. Now, if you were really worried about drippage, which of course there would be, what you could do is have a fan at the bottom of that cooler that doesn't push the liquid up, but it keeps it like sort of a neutrally buoyant in the air.
The liquid or does the burrito itself somehow hover like a frog in an electromagnetic field?
No, I don't think it would be strong enough to make burrito hover. I think that's what the hand is for.
Ah, yes, in many ways.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's just to keep the liquid off of the cloth, you know? Because if you're going to get a new thing for your house, you don't want it to be a new thing you have to clean. Eh?
It's still a cloth glove?
Well, it's probably like that wetsuit material. Like, I mean, it could be metal. It could be a metal thing like all the other utensils.
You know, like an infinity gauntlet style.
Yeah,
You know, like, big brass gauntlet.
The burrito safe, gauntlet. Of course, yeah.
You know what would be good? If you had it made out of metal, it could be heated so that it keeps the burrito hot as you eat it. And I don't mean warm, I mean hot. Every mouthful will burn you all the way to the end. A lot of foods, they start out too hot, but then, of course, Newton's laws of thermodynamics dictate that by the end, it'll probably be at a very edible temperature. Not anymore with the burrito glove. Every mouthful is torture. That's our guarantee.
Their burrito glove. the rest of your life will seem incredible.
Look, I think those are two very valid approaches to burrito improving the burrito experience.
Yeah.
We'll leave it to the the people to decide which is better. But I think it's pretty clear.
I mean,
Because a lot of the things that I added into your glove made it demonstrably worse, lowering the standard of your idea below the critical threshold.
But just because it's bad, it doesn't mean it's not good, right? I've written down utensils for every food. I think we've come up with an idea for a utensil for a burrito. We haven't necessarily come up with an idea for a sketch. I've still written it down. But I think that maybe this would be based around a company. I don't know if we've ever made a sketch idea that's based around a company that does a thing that's weird.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting to me. I mean, I'm willing to go with you on this, Alistair.
But to do one where this company, they specialize in creating a utensil for every food. Mm. And it's the perfect utensil for every food. Sometimes it's a variation on a utensil you've already got, Could be like a rice fork, if you were to create a new utensil for the rice, would you go with a fork?
Well, I'm trying to picture it now, what I think would be best.
A rice straw.
Yeah. Well, it is a little tempting to go with some kind of a straw type thing because, of course, rice to me seem as close as food gets to being ants. And you look at the way that an echidna or something like that eats the ant, it's with that straw-like beak that it has.
Yeah, but it
then
requires...
it has a tongue.
But it has a tongue, yeah.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. I don't know if if you could have a tongue,
sort of
a secondary
tongue. Yeah. But I mean, if you could get a tongue extension... Like something that if you just flicked your tongue out, you went like that, and it could go, let's say, another meter.
Mm.
And it was silver, so it was considered polite.
Yeah. that's the real innovation.
I think the problem with the tongue is because it's so flesh-colored.
Mm.
And if people see it, they go, oh. And people know that you're experiencing things when they see you watch you licking your plate.
Yep.
Look at all those... good feelings he's experiencing. That's not okay.
Yeah, we can't have that.
Mm.
Not here at the ambassador's residence.
You're leaving a wet residue as well.
Mm. So you're thinking like a dry, non-flesh coloured tongue that could do this service.
Maybe it's got prongs all the way down it.
barbed. Interesting. I'm wondering, I'm now thinking about, in Men in Black, the first Men in Black, when, by the way, I consider the first Men in Black to be Men in Black International. that's when the series really kicked off for me.
Yeah,
but
cool.
If we were to go just the strictly canon first Men in Black, when you see that big creature, the cockroach at the end there, and it's got those sort of extra little... things on the sides of its mouth that shove things down when it's eating people. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Wait, which creature?
The cockroach, the giant bug cockroach creature. When it eats Tommy Lee Jones, it sort of has these little things that sort of unfurl at the sides of its mouth and scoop and push Tommy Lee Jones down its gullet. And I feel like that's something that could be quite good from if we had an automated sort of thing that straps onto the neck or something and then shovels food in. Be quite good.
Yeah, well, I guess if you could get that kind of that thing that Bob Dylan has for holding his harmonica, and you put your plate in that plate of food.
Have we already talked about that on this show? That feels that's very, very good. Like
for
using one of those to eat corn.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be great if you didn't even need that little thing. I mean, it's great to have that thing on the side of your mouth that would kind of just essentially just curl its fingers out and pull things in from the plate. But if you could just tilt your head back and it just falls into your mouth.
Yeah. Well, then, you know what? I was admiring, I had cause to Google scoops on the internet recently, and it brought up a picture of that fish, that chip scoop that they use at McDonald's, which has got sort of that wide end for scooping, and then it sort of funnels down at the back of the scoop. There's like a narrow end that just allows you to just tip it up and back into the little bag, and that really should be the design of the plate, because there's absolutely no reason why the plate can't be the utensil, right?
Yeah.
And absolutely every food should be able to be eaten just by bringing, you know, it sort of turns solids into a drink. You know, you can pour.
Well, it would be, yeah. And you think about it, you as a parent, you're cooking up the various, you know, the various bits and pieces of a meal. And instead of having to serve it up onto 6 or 29 different plates like you have at your house, right? you just serve it up into a big sort of trough or kind of thing like that. And then everybody around the house, just around the table, just scoops into that trough and then holds the bottom funnel to their mouth and just kind of shakes the trough from side to side and lets it slide in until there's enough of a mouthful.
Exactly. Exactly. And it feels very hygienic because there are two different ends to the scoop, you know. There's the scooping end and then there's the eating end. So it's not like that. It removes the stigma of double dipping. So, yeah, well, absolutely. We have
In household double dipping, let's say we've got corn chips and I'm dipping them into some salsa, right? I tend to dip, eat, then turn the chip around, and then dip the other side that hadn't touched my mouth.
But had touched your fingers.
Yeah, but I don't know if you've washed your hands before the thing, then you're fine. Then you're golden, mate.
You are golden. You are home and hosed down. Because that's how seriously you take hygiene.
Yeah, I mean, I'm squirting on some Tizer between every chip.
I think the scoop, like, what are we looking for here, Alistair? Because you know me, I thought we already had a sketch at the burrito glove. I'd make an ad for the burrito glove. That would be a full TV half hour, as far as I'm concerned. An infomercial.
Yeah.
But you know you, Alistair, you want there to be more to things.
Yeah, and I think I want there to be more, and I don't think the variations on things has been enough. I'll write plate scoop down, but I'm putting it under the heading of utensils for every food.
That's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you come up with a new food, I'm sorry, you're not allowed to market that food until you've also come up with a new utensil. Because
a new utensil?
Because if you don't do your due diligence and think of a utensil that's going to work perfectly for that food, then you're not taking responsibility for the consequences of what you're putting out into the world. You know, it's like you're no better. You know, you invent a new type of dangling bolognese, right? You're no better than Mark Zuckerberg making Facebook and not thinking about the consequences for democracy.
Did you say a dangling bolognese?
That's right, Alistair. I did. Why?
But how did you picture this?
I guess I sort of pictured that it hangs above your head and you sort of eat it sort of like you're a fish swimming amongst seaweed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess the sauce is kind of dripping down onto your face.
Are you in water?
Are
There's
you in
no
water?
Foods that you eat underwater.
Well, this is very, again, I mean, this is territory that we've explored.
Yeah, I know.
But only in the context of making it possible to eat regular foods underwater.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. No. I don't know if you're thinking of additional foods that could be eaten without the aid of the sporkle, I believe we call it.
Well, because I mean, there's a lot more to the experience of eating in food, eating in water than just what the food is, because you can't help but also eat some of the water.
Yeah.
You know, and it'd be cool if they could create a snorkel.
Drinking, we call it.
A scuba. If they could create a scuba that is just in your nose. So your mouth is free.
Mm.
Your mouth is free to, you know, try to talk. And
you know, you know what we should do, actually, Alistair?
Mm.
Is we should take it upon ourselves to specialize the roles of the mouth and the nose. Okay. And this is the new deal. Nose is for breathing. Mouth is for eating. We are going to surgically separate the breathing tube down to the lungs. That's going to be exclusively now attached to the nose. Yeah. And the mouth is going to exclusively be attached to the food hole down to the stomach. And that removes the risk of choking. To a certain extent, if your nose gets blocked, you will die. But it also forces them to focus on what they're good at. Because at the moment, I think the mouth is trying to be a jack of all trades.
Yeah.
You know, it's eating, it's breathing, it's talking. Well, not anymore. There will be no more talking for you, mouth, except for burp talking. You'll still be able to do that.
You know what I think should happen? I think vomit should just go into the poop deposit.
Absolutely. Push it down, stomach. You don't like it? You just get it through the system and get it out. We have diarrhea for that.
Yeah, or there could be a valve. Maybe we could get a new hole on your back. So that vomit could just come
out. We'll call it the blow-off.
Yeah, the blow-off. And you could just vomit out your back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it'd be great because then pubs. You know,
it'd be great.
Because then pubs could just have like a hole that you just walk up to and you just lean up against the wall.
Yeah.
And then
even stop your conversation.
You don't have to stop, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it brings, excess, eating to excess and purging. And also people, after this whole pandemic is over, people are going to want to spend as much time with other people as they can, and they're not going to be wanting to take time off to go vomit.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, actually, I tell you what, this separating the mouth and the breathing and all that sort of stuff, that would be actually a really logical response to the coronavirus. Because at the moment, you know, you getting your hands on your mouth and that sort of thing, you know, you can get coronavirus through food because it's a respiratory disease, but you can get that disease down into your lungs just because it's in your mouth. Well, not anymore, right? Sorry, coronavirus, you got into the mouth. All you are now, to me, is a snack, okay?
Yeah.
You're not a threat.
You know where I think would be good for some breathing holes is in that part, like in between your sort of collarbone and your back shoulder muscles, right? Just like there's that kind of gappy down hole that you can create in your there in between your collarbone and your neck.
Yep.
I reckon there, if there was a hole on each side and you could breathe through that, because then you've already got the cloth of your clothes there that acts as a mask.
Mm.
You know, then you don't have to wear any more clothes. We're already wearing a mask over the rest of our body.
Why can't we learn to breathe through our butts?
Isn't that the craziest thing that we're wearing a mask over the, you know, 85% of our body, mm-hmm. and the 15% that doesn't
that's exposed.
That's the part where germs are
all our
out.
Vulnerabilities. Good one, God. / evolution.
So who's proposing this? Why is this being proposed in this sketch?
Initially it was going to be so that you could eat underwater, right?
Oh, yeah.
But I don't see why it can't be a doctor proposing this and just selling the various benefits, of which eating underwater is only one.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because if you can breathe through your nose and have your nose above water and then your mouth just below, you can eat anything you want in there, right?
Yeah.
And you don't even have to come, like you wouldn't want there to be any waves or anything. But if it's mill pond flat, you can experience the untrammeled delight of breathing air and eating like a whale.
That's true, yeah. I mean, I guess that is really interesting, because I guess whales probably do, when they're eating plankton, go up to the surface and just have their back nose sticking out of the water. Have you seen those noses from up above? When there's two, I think, which one is it, sperm whale or one of them? It's not sperm whale, but one of them has like two
nostrils.
And it's definitely like a nostrils. It's like two nostrils.
Yeah. Well, am I right in thinking that not all whales are from the same vent, you know, trip to the ocean, so to speak?
Really?
That I think, and I could be wrong here, but there are different origin points for that particular evolutionary what's it. I might be thinking of seals, but
yeah. Like walruses and seals and those sea lions and things like that.
Yeah. They might have all done it separately, because there are some that have got like separated tails and some that have just got one tail.
This is that
you can tell. I don't know.
Crazy
anyway,
I think
there have been different goes at it.
This has been How Do Whales Work. And the crazy thing about evolving back into the water is all those creatures that, like, it must have happened fast, right? You know, like, usually evolution takes thousands of years or whatever, millions.
Mm.
But, like, how quickly those creatures who couldn't live in the water died off. You know, as they were all there, as their whole families would go into the water, somehow, you know, there's like just treading water and then just like quickly, let's breathe one. And I guess one of them would be like mounting the other instead of like pushing the other one down underwater.
I think
so. I guess suddenly it's very quickly, like skewed towards creatures that can hold their breath for a long time.
I think, for evolution to really kick off like that, you know, if you want big change like that, it's like restructuring the economy or getting rid of capitalism or something like that, you know. You need probably a charismatic leader, you know.
Sure.
One sort of hippopotamus type character who can really motivate wave after wave of its fellow hippopotami into the ocean. You know, despite the bodies, you know, like Churchill could have done it.
Yeah. Do you think the hippopotamus,
if Churchill,
is an
instead
one?
Of had saying we will fight them in the on the beaches, had said we will fight them
in the shallow water,
in the water that's just over head height.
Yeah.
You know, he could have got the British people out there, and with their pluck. They would have prevailed ultimately, I think, if they could have convinced the Nazis to come in and fight them there, as opposed to just watching them all drown.
And when the Nazis decided that they weren't going to fight them there, They could have mocked them. Oh, you're too scared to come in where the water's just a bit over your head.
Oh, they hate that.
They would have felt so mocked. And then Hitler was genuinely like this. He would have just been like, oh, we're not going to let them beat us there. Send our men in.
Yeah, because he doesn't, say what you like about Hitler, he doesn't come across like somebody who could have a laugh at his own expense.
Hmm.
You know? He didn't have much of a, that sense of humor that's so crucial.
In war.
That's what.
I mean, look, if he didn't have it and he lost, I mean, that's a good sign that it might have been crucial.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Now, what am I writing down here?
Did you wrote down eating food underwater? Did you write down combining the two the breathing holes? Or separating the holes? Right.
Yeah.
Two tubes. That's the two tube system. And never the twain shall meet. Right? And then if you wanted to write down an additional thing, it could be Churchill's like you could absolutely convince me that there was an SBS documentary, black and white stock footage from the, you know, from the Second World War of Churchill's secret plan to win the war by getting the British people to evolve to live in the water. But I feel like we've already done evolving to live in the water.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is that we've done that with a family who decides that they're going to evolve towards aquatic creatures and they just live in the bath. The dad forces them all to live in the bath so that they can start evolving to become aquatic. But I guess I was thinking about those animals, you know, and like genuinely like how the process happened.
Mm.
But maybe, you know, how it happened very quickly. I don't know how it would happen very quickly.
Yeah, it's hard to think of what the funny angle is on that.
Yeah. But, you know? I mean, look, Churchill's secret plan, we'll fight them.
In the deep water, end.
In the water that's just a bit over their head.
it doesn't, there are a few flaws in it, in that it like, you know, surely swimming would factor into this in some way. But I think part of the British resolve, their famous resolve, was that they resolved that they wouldn't breathe or they wouldn't swim or something like that. There'd be no treading water. Yeah, and they stuck to it.
We're really just treading water at this stage, sir.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I still think that there's something in those creatures, but I get that you couldn't see it immediately, so I will quit.
No, I don't want you to quit, Alistair. If you think there's something there, you pursue it.
Honest, I just needed to get a reaction out of you, and then we can leave it now.
Have I talked about this before? My theory that it really shows you how shit fish are, that almost any other creature can go into the ocean and just give it a go, and fish who've just been there their entire lives and they've never, you know, that's all they do is live in the water. Yeah. And then, you know, a bird or, you know, some sort of cow type thing can come in the ocean
and outperform them
just as a joke almost. And then just fluke it and be better at it than fish.
Well, they're usually in there. They're usually in there for pleasure rather than business. And then they're like, "Oh, while I'm here, do some really easy to grab food."
Yeah, well, it's like when somebody shows up for an audition with their friend and they weren't even seriously going to go in the audition, and then they go in the audition, and then at the end of the story, they're Angelina Jolie or something like that. They become very, very successful.
I guess
without even trying.
It's
humiliating
because...
for the fish. You know, we talk about a fish out of water being somebody who struggles. I put it to you that the fish in water aren't doing that great either.
And... And the opposite of a you know, this fish out of water, but a human in water is doing pretty well as well.
It's also doing fine. Yes. A bird in water. A bird. They're some of the best at it.
Yeah, well, it's turned out that some birds are some of the best swimmers in the world.
Mm.
Penguins? So. They're some of the deepest swimmers of all creatures.
Is that true?
Yeah.
How deep we talking?
I mean, kilometer? Like, you know, I think maybe like they can do like 400 meters or something.
That's so fucking deep.
Yeah.
Man, that's deep. Good on them.
Yeah. But, you know, look. Yeah, but again, we've gone really far here. It says here, wait, 1,800 feet. Wait, how's that in meters? God damn.
1,800 feet, well, it's about 3, so that's about 600 meters. Man. Wow. Man, that's deep.
Yeah, 563.
I wonder if their ears pop.
Eh?
I wonder if their ears pop.
I wonder if they have
I reckon
ears.
Everything would pop.
Do you think it feels good ears? Or bad down there?
Is it good or bad?
Like how good would you feel down there, do you think?
Think good? I wouldn't like it. I would feel, I was about to say I'd feel under a lot of pressure, but I wouldn't say that. I think it would be very dark, and that would be very stressful to me.
But also calming.
Calming?
Calming. Maybe. Calming. Calming, 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 calming,
oh my God, calming,
calming, calming, calming, calming, calming. Something's calming.
is that anything? You know, the calming effects of shark attacks. Sort of, we find that a lot of people who have survived shark attacks say that just before they were the shark opened its mouth to consume them, they felt a great calm come over themselves.
I like the idea that, you know, they say that about drowning, but that being eaten by a shark is actually a really peaceful way to die.
Oh, it's one of the best ways to go.
It's actually, yeah. I mean, I did hear somebody talk about that, where they talk about like not really feeling anything, but feeling like just some pressure, but not pain. Like they go, I can just feel some pressure. And I was like, oh, there's a shark pumping. Biting down on my arm.
Yeah, well, that would be shock, I suppose, right? The shock of the new.
I think the shock comes in a little bit later when you have a chance to reflect on it.
Okay. So this is pre-shock. This is just you not really.
Well, I think this is your body does these kinds of things to help you survive. So that, because if you're in loads of pain, you're probably not going to work that hard to get away. But if you're like, oh, something's happening and I'm really alert and I can just start beating the shit out of this really mean creature.
Real nasty. Nasty looking.
Have you had any moments in your life where you've been alone with an animal and you've realized, oh shit, this is on? Like, I'm in a weird battle situation?
I'm trying to think if that's ever happened to me. I don't think so. I have been attacked by a few sheep, like butted by some sheep.
Yeah.
No, what about you? Be great if you had a really good story about it.
Oh, that would be really good, wouldn't it? That'd really make something out of this. No, but I think about those moments a lot, where it's like you become aware that you're in one of those moments that you hear about. Like I think like becoming aware that you're going to be mugged or like where you're really under attack. I don't know.
This is the closest. I might have already talked about this once, but this is the closest I've come to that, which is that I was driving a car by myself from Queensland back to Melbourne, and the GPS took me, something weird happened with the GPS, and it took me basically up through these mountains somewhere in Queensland, right? And then I got onto this long stretch of dirt road somewhere, like, it was weird. I was like up a mountain, but there was this long straight bit of dirt road and flat. And I just sort of realized I was driving really, really fast on this dirt road. Mm. And then I felt something change in the way the car was moving, where I was like, oh, if I do anything, this car is going to flip out of control.
Yeah.
And I just took my foot off the accelerator and I just held onto the steering wheel until the car came to a complete just slowed down and just came to a complete stop of its own accord. And then, you know, I took a few deep breaths and then I started paying more attention to the driving.
Yeah, I think I've kind of been in the opposite of that, where I was driving through a mountain on a dirt road, but it was raining, and then I didn't really notice that much, and then I must have tapped the brakes or something like that, and then I just started spinning down this hill in the mud.
Fuck.
And I was like, oh, I'm currently in a car crash. Like, just like, and then just kind of like, luckily just kind of keep going, but then hitting the bank at the end.
Yeah.
Like, but it like not doing so much damage to the car that you can't keep driving it.
Yeah, good. Can't keep speeding in the rain. Yeah. Like, so you were going down a hill.
Going down a hill.
Yeah, heading, brutal.
Yeah. And just dirt road? Spinning. Yeah, dirt road. Well, mud road.
Yeah. Yeah. And like spinning, like we're talking like a 360s.
Yeah, 360s, but like horizontally rather than vertically.
Wait, what? Horizontal. All right. How many 360s are we talking?
I don't know. Could have been two. Could have been two and a half.
Yeah, what's that? It's 720. Talking a 7 and 20?
Yeah, 7 and 20.
Yeah, nice.
Did a 7 and then I did a 20.
Yeah.
Well, look, Andy, I've written down shark. Eaten by a shark is the most peaceful way to die. But it's more of a kind of like a line that you would have in something.
Yeah.
I hear that's a really peaceful way to die.
Well, I mean, if that was the case, do you think that like a lot of old people opting for assisted suicide would there be this service now, kind of, where you'll take them out and you'll make them look real tempting and you'll organise for them to be eaten by a shark? And then would it sort of start to become quite a commodified, quite a formalised process where instead of taking them out into the middle of the ocean and just hoping that a shark shows up, there are actually now these sharkatoriums attached to most cemeteries where they have, you know, they breed sharks and they basically keep them sort of strapped on these big trolleys, right? Underwater, but then they'll lower the old person in a chair and they'll basically fire this shark at you because they want to remove a lot of the variables, right? To ensure that it's a replicable thing. Otherwise, there's too many risks because it's not really...
I think if people think that it's peaceful, they're not going to try and control the shark. I think this just like, it just becomes like a medical grade shark tank.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
And then you just take your loved one to it. And I guess if you want to assist them with it, you can push them in.
It's only legal in the Netherlands.
Yeah. Well. And I guess, you know, in some parts there, they just kind of cordon, like they've sort of caged off a corner of a canal. And
there's a lot of screaming, but the doctor's there to tell you that, that's actually just air escaping from the body as the rib cage is crushed by the jaws of the shark. They're actually incredibly calm.
Mm. Well, that's also very exciting. And, you know, and you, as you know from those reports, they just feel a bit of pressure, but no pain. The screaming is actually helping, because you know that screaming lowers how much pain you feel.
You're right. So they're feeling swear. Maybe even negative pain.
Yeah. So there's a chance that they're feeling total bliss.
Total bliss.
And usually when somebody, you know, is about to die, you let them swim with the dolphins. So this is kind of being able to put all those great experiences together.
Exactly.
Because these are people who want to die anyway. So why not dying while swimming with a large
and the sharks
want to
eat,
creature?
Man. They want to eat.
And the sharks want to eat. They want to live, you want to die.
It's synergy. It's a symbiotic relationship is what it is.
I mean,
everybody's getting something out of it.
Yeah. You know, and I imagine some animals must think about that while they're getting, you know, eaten by creatures. Also, you know what's crazy?
At least I'm part of the great circle of life.
You know, he's hungry, you know. He needs to eat. It's going to happen.
It's a little bit Arsavenia. Is that what you're saying?
Nansavenia, Wabagichiwawa.
Yeah, it's a little bit of that.
Yeah. Because, I mean, when you think about it, though, so many of those animals around you, right? Bees, beetles, ladybugs, fish. You know those fish that you were mocking earlier? Most of them are so young. Just think of how young they are. They're probably, almost all of them would be under 3 months old.
Yeah.
You know, like I wouldn't go out, you know, like, you know, you're bragging how good you are compared to fish. But if you went out there and you wouldn't fuck with some 25-year-old tuna.
You're right.
You know, I mean, yeah. I get it. I get what you're saying. But you wouldn't mess
with
one of those.
You're saying it's a sort of privilege and they haven't had the same opportunities that I've had.
No, I'm just saying that they're like in every respect in the water, a 25-year-old tuna would fuck you up. Like, you know, I think even if you were near the water, somewhere pretty
still
close,
stand a good chance.
I think they'd do pretty good against you, right?
Okay,
but most of the fish and the animals that you encounter, they're so young, and just think of like how dumb young things are. Just think how many like just 2 months old birds eat. Anyway, it's awful.
There's a lot of babies. The ocean is full of babies, basically.
But also land. And I'm just saying that we're surrounded by idiots.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, didn't get anything out of that.
Sorry, Al. How many sketch ideas have we written down, Alistair?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But I think they're all half ideas. But I think I'm happy to go
Alistair,
with this.
I think they're all full ideas.
Four ideas? Each one is four ideas?
I think they're all full ideas. Awful. Yeah, well, awful I mean... ideas. No. All full ideas.
All full ideas. Yeah, they are. I guess they are all full. Well, Andy, then that brings us to my favorite part of the show, which is where we take three words from a listener who supports us on Patreon. And today's listener is none other than Cedric,
thank you so much for supporting us on Patreon, Cedric.
Cedric,
that's a beautiful thing that you do.
It means everything to us what you've done. Are you the Cedric that supports Do Go On as well? And did I meet you once? Did you come to Australia and I met you? Anyway, hello, Cedric. Now, Andy. Yes. Cedric has sent in three words. Do you want to try and guess what one of them is?
Yeah. Copernicus.
No, it's not that. But
Nicaragua?
No, but
Rohypnol.
These words do involve looking at something. So,
but
you were close with Copernicus.
Thanks.
Here's the three words from Cedric. Tape, your shows.
Tape your shows. Yeah, I see what this is about. I see what this is about, Cedric.
But Cedric sent this before, and I thought, I was like, oh, this feels like it's a it's a passive aggressive thing. And I was like, but, and then I said it to him and he was like, oh no, I was just, I don't know, I'm just messing around.
Yeah.
But well, but also for everybody who's waiting on Magma, and I said a few weeks ago that it was going to about to be ready, there's been some delay because
so
of
it'll
me.
Be the end of the month ish.
At the end okay? of June ish. Yeah.
Yeah.
So sorry
yeah,
about that.
But that's all right. It'll be worthwhile, worth waiting for. We yeah. hope.
I think it'll be in a better state when I see it. Also, mm. I've just remembered something. Somebody contacted me on. On Instagram, we're at Two and Tank on Instagram, Frank West, and he said, Two in the Think Tank, more like Two in the Stink Tank. And I said, oh, this is the last straw. We were not prepared for burns of this magnitude. And he said, good, because that's all I had. And I said, well, it stung, and I'm not sure we're going to recover. He said, I'd like to claim the podcast as my trophy. I said, it's yours. He said, I'll collect my prize now, tomorrow. And I said, check your back pocket. And he said, oh, how did it get in there? I said, that's comedy for you. I mean, sorry, magic. And then he said, you know what? You've earned the podcast back, but I expect a mention or else. And I said, thank you very much, and I'll try to remember this kind act.
Legend.
So,
thank
you very much.
Two in the stink tank?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
We're not going to recover.
Yeah.
But now we got to focus on tape your shows.
Tape your shows. Well, okay. So, I mean, you know, there's a comment there, which is that we should be taping our shows. And indeed, we are. And indeed, we have made a resolution, have we not, Alistair, that we will definitely do that as soon as we finish doing a show from now on. There's going to be no slinking out of this like a worm. All right?
Yeah.
Every show will be taped.
Yep. And because it is such a pain in the ass to have to relearn a show.
It'll be taped straight away.
Mm-hmm.
When it's good, and it'll be made available to them's that wants it.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Of course, back in the day, before the concept of taping shows was available, before tape even existed, I suppose people would have had to, I don't know, train up a troop of monkeys or something like that to sort of imitate their movements while a highly skilled parrot repeated the words that had been sort of drilled into its skull.
I like the idea that there. I mean, I think that's a very good idea. I think the idea that there was a group of people in. I mean, I guess if this was ancient Greece, it's probably a group of people who were slaves to, you know, that they had. Slaves from all over the world, right? I don't know how they chose who were slaves, but
we hope it was a fair system, whatever.
We hope it was a fair multicultural system, is what I'm saying.
equal opportunity slavers.
I would, you know, that's anyway. To be honest, that would make me feel a lot better about stuff. But
hire women slaves. No, sorry, this is not okay.
And so I like that they would have. So let's say they put on a play. Let's say it was one of who's that guy?
Euripides.
Yeah, great. What did you say? Euripides.
Euripides.
All right, great.
The
it's Greek, Euripides.
Greek tragedies or whatever.
I was thinking of Aristophanes.
Ah, anyway. Aristophanes.
Yeah, Aristophanes, and let's say he's put on this great play. It's a huge success, right?
Mm.
But now they don't. They want to keep it. They want to store it. Put on the shelf for a couple of years and bring it back, right? Because they've milked all the money out of the Athenian crowd that they could.
Yep.
And so, but they want it to be just the way that it was. They've worked on this for 3 years to get it to the point where it was. So they train up about 15 people, you know, all the actors to replace the people, and they just put them in a room somewhere, like, you know, they've got just a place, and they just get them to do it every day.
Just over and over again, constantly.
Over and over again.
No contact with the outside world.
Keep it fresh like that. Keep it going. Like, keep it fresh in their minds, right? Just keep it going like that. And then after 3 years, they get it out and then they put it on and they just, the actors who are going to now play them, they just learn from those actors how to do it. And then they put it on straight away. Like that.
So they
get all
those
the
actors, and then they shut the door while those people continue constantly performing.
Yeah,
in this chamber.
Now, but then the fun part would be also how different the play is after those 3 years.
Mm.
And they've just been performing it in that room. And like, they've just kind of found these weird shortcuts for it and these ways of making it funnier, maybe.
Maybe. Or maybe as you know.
Or more tragic.
Because I keep pushing on this idea that they're not allowed to leave or do anything else. Maybe it's just become more and more unhinged.
Yeah, sure. You know, and there's more screaming.
There's more screaming. And begging for freedom. I also, Alistair, think a great idea for an episode of MTV's Cribs, you know this current reference, are you across this?
Mm. Yeah.
Was that somebody's got a really big, rich mansion, and they're so rich that they have one room that's like a theater where people are constantly performing Hamlet because it's their favorite play. So whenever they want, they could just go in and like watch a bit of Hamlet and then leave.
Is that... Anyway. Is there something like that in Mr. Burns' mansion, maybe?
Oh, really?
Yeah,
no, I was
maybe.
Sure I'd thought of that.
Oh, I think where they say, this play closed 2 months ago or something like that. I can't remember.
Well, if it's not in The Simpsons, then it's my idea.
Yeah.
And I thought of it. And
great.
I especially thought of making it in MTV's Cribs.
I think that's really good. What do you say? Have we done it today?
I think we've done it. I think we've done our duty.
All right. Well, I'll take us through the sketch ideas. We got the Patreon thugs.
Mm.
We got utensils.
And as I say, that's not a threat.
It's not a threat.
Nobody's allowed to interpret that as anything.
No, of course
not. We love everybody, and we especially love you if for some reason your payment doesn't go through. That's one of the weird things about us.
Yeah, we love your, and it's not even your flaws because it's one of the best things about you. Anyway.
Exactly.
Then we got utensils for every food. A company has decided to create utensils for every food, like the burrito glove and the plate scoop.
Mm.
The plate scoop, that's a utensil for every food, which includes one for every combination of all the foods on your meal.
Correct.
Separating the nose, mouth, and the new vomit hole. It's the two tube system so that you can eat underwater and also vomit.
Alistair, there is no way on earth that any of these ideas have been half ideas.
No? You don't think so?
You've something's happened to you where you've forgotten what's a full idea. You've got you've got that brain injury, like that guy who could only see the left half of things and so would only eat half of his meal until you turned the plate around and then he'd eat the other half.
Sounds like he's got a hemisphere problem. Did that guy have epilepsy? I think.
Yeah, maybe.
They would solve a lot of that by cutting the connection between the two hemispheres, I think.
This is one of the problems we can solve by cutting the brain in half.
Well, that was a genuine thing that they would
do in
order to stop, I think, seizures.
But then
they would find out each hemisphere had its own personality.
That's so crazy. That's so fucking crazy.
Churchill's secret plan. We'll fight them in the water that's just a bit over our head. I don't know. This is a new study has uncovered that being eaten by a shark is the most peaceful way to die, and a whole industry is built around that. And then
International.
Old-timey Greek play storage method. People in a room.
That's right. It's always running. Keeping it fresh. It's never been more fresh.
Couldn't be more fresh. Ah, freshly squeezed. Straight from this person.
Yep.
All right. Here we go. Blop, 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 blop. I'm going to blop. I'm going to blop. I'm going to blop outside my back. I'm going to blop, 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 blop. Blop, 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 blop,
thank
blop,
you
blop,
so
blop,
much blop, 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 for listening blop. To Two in the Think Tank. We really do appreciate it. I have been Andy Matthews, and you can find me at Stupid Old Andy on Twitter.
And I'm Alistair Trombley Birchall, and you can find me at Alistair TB or at A Trombley Birchall on Instagram, or you can find us at Two in Tank.
That's
anywhere.
Right.
Anywhere you can review us if you want on one of those iTunes or Apple Podcasts or whatever.
That's it.
Hasn't been one for ages, and I still check every 2 days. And I didn't mean that for that to sound as sad as it did.
Oh, well.
But it did.
Sad, pretty sad.
Anyway, if you're listening to this anytime after June 30th, then Magma is out and you can get it from our website. But if you are listening to this before June 30th, it's going to be out at the end of the month.
That's right. And
take care of yourselves.
Indeed,
and we
and each other. Love.
And we love you. You.
Thank you, bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. It's not optional. You have to do it. We used to go easy on it, but now you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.